Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 233, where we chat with Karen Ferrero and talk about what happens when life throws you a curveball.
We have a two-year-old and an almost two-and-a-half-year-old and a one-year-old. And my husband's hospitalized for about 5 months. I have to sell my home. I have to buy a new home. I have to make the new home accessible. I have to find childcare. I have to find someone to take my son to therapy still. Oh, and I have to keep working this whole time.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me, as always, is my capeless wonder co-host, Scott Trench.
Oh, well, thank you for the billowing introduction, Mindy. Always great to be here.
I just snorted. Scott and I are here to do something. Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to every money story, because we truly believe financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting or what curveballs life throws at you along the way.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or set up a large trust fund for a dependent, perhaps a disabled family member, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
Holy cow, Scott. Today's episode is so, so, so good. Karen started off life happy-go-lucky, da-da-da-da-da-da, and then life threw her a giant curveball, and then another one. And today's episode is about dealing with those financial curveballs and being able to weather those storms.
Yeah, I think her story has a ton of different of these curveballs, as Mindy alluded to, or I guess stated directly in there earlier. But yeah, I mean, Karen's been through a lot, and her family's been through a lot. And what I think you'll see out of this is, hey, proper financial preparation can make things a lot easier, and might have made things a little bit easier for her in some of those stages. But her overwhelming grit, competence, ability, you know, her career, all those things helped her get through a lot of those things, and I think set her family up for success. And so I think she's a really shining success story here, and that there's a lot to learn from the way she did do a lot of the things, especially early in her career, that I think we should all be cognizant of, that, you know, because life can happen to us. We have a choice right now while things are good, if they are good for us, of course, at least assuming that, to maybe make some preparations for those types of things down the road. And so I think this is a really powerful episode. I think you'll learn a lot. I certainly did. And I really, really admire what she's done and what she's been through and how she's handled it.
Yep. And her ability to look towards the future, because she realizes that she does need to make some legacy plans and has taken steps to do that fairly easily. Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split. with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Take control of your investments and secure a stable 8% annual return today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets. The easiest way to collect rent? Rent app. RentApp is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love RentApp for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? RentApp, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Karen Ferrero, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. I cannot wait to jump into your story today.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here, Mindy.
So where does your journey with money begin?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I grew up in a very small town, middle class family, and neither of my parents went to college. I was the first person in my family to go to college. It's interesting that my father became disabled and my mom worked part-time. And so I really saw the struggle with my mom as a working woman and trying to, you know, support the family while my father was disabled. And so that really made an impression upon me early in life that I had to stand on my own two feet and be independent and support myself. So I think that's kind of how things started with money for me.
Okay. And you said you're the first one that went to college. What did your financial position look like graduating high school? And then what did it look like in college?
Sure. I worked, my senior year in high school, I worked nights at the Illinois State Police to support myself and try to get to college. I got grants and loans and scholarships. My family didn't really have a college savings account for me. So I went the student loan route. I worked several jobs all through school, and I was an engineering student, and I did start my career in tech, and my whole career has been in tech, which was lucrative and beneficial. So I was able to, you know, handle those student loans, but I really did put myself through school through scholarships and loans and working.
Awesome. And what kind of tech are we talking about? Were you a software engineer?
I was electrical engineer and software engineer. I started my career as a software engineer and developer.
Awesome. And so what was kind of your position upon graduation? Did you have any debt at all, or were you, what was your job? How did things go?
I did. And it's interesting because I went to my father for advice. I was offered a job. I was working as a software engineer while I was going to school, and they offered me a job before I graduated. And my father's advice was, take the money. It's good money. Take it. You can finish school later because you're accumulating all this debt. So that's what I did. I traveled a lot and wasn't able to stay in school. So I did drop out at that point in time. And I didn't get my degree later when my employer paid for it. And that afforded me the opportunity to pay down my student loans earlier. I think I had around 40K. Maybe a little bit less. I was able to pay that off early.
So how does your early career progress? What are some of the big milestones following this? You know, you get your degree, you pay off your debt. Where are you at? Maybe 5, 10, whatever point you want to.
Yeah, my career progressed from a software engineer through project and program management. And I was in corporate IT for the first several years of my career. And then I pivoted to consulting. And I started consulting in the mid-90s with Netscape, little browser company. If y'all remember Netscape, I decided I wanted to work there. And it was like the best time of my life. I absolutely loved it. And I had been in consulting really ever since then. And in my 20s and at this time in my career, I had no, I wasn't married. I had no kids. I traveled a lot and I spent a lot of money because I felt that the money was always there to be made. you know, I spent it on travel and handbags and shoes and all that silly stuff that you spend it on when you're in your 20s. And you don't have any other responsibilities. So
can you give us an idea of the income over this period and, you know, the amount you spent and whether you did any type of investing, maybe like 401k or stock options or those types of things?
I did 401k. I did not max anything out. I didn't even max to meet the matching because I wanted more money in my paycheck at that time. I just didn't. It's not something that I did. I learned that a lot later in life, unfortunately. And I didn't invest. I started investing maybe in the late 90s. I opened up an E-Trade account. This was before I got married. And I just dabbled here and there. But I didn't do the smart things like take advantage of 401k, or we had stock options. So my stock options at Netscape I held on to, and AOL bought us, and they were worth nothing after that, you know. So, yeah, I just, it took a while. It took a while before I really came around. I think I, you know, I read The Millionaire Next Door in the late 90s or around 2000, and that kind of started my shift, I guess you could say. But even then, I was still a spender.
What was the, so at the point of the shift, what was your financial position like?
I was probably, if you include my mortgage, I was probably negative net worth to the tune of 200K.
And what was your income at this point?
My income was around, I want to say 125.
In the 90s?
About 2000.
Wow. Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And what's the debt comprised of?
The debt would be mortgage, cars. Let me think. Mortgage and cars primarily, and credit card. A lot of credit card.
And did you have any assets against that?
No. I mean, 401k, probably around 30K in my 401k.
Okay, so and how many years into your career are you at this point?
Eight.
Eight. So you're approaching 30?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm about 30. I'm about 30 years old.
Okay. I hear her saying, oh, I made so many mistakes. I also hear you saying, I have a $30,000 net worth at age 30. Scott, we have to remember, we run with some pretty big money nerds. We don't run with real life circles. That's doing pretty good. With $30,000 in your 401k, I might have said net worth, I meant 401k, $30,000 in your 401k at age 30, you were, for the time, you were doing awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I think I'd, yeah, you know, if I could turn back the clock, I would have done things a lot better.
Holy cow, would I have done a whole lot of things differently if I could turn back the clock? If you know how to do that, let me know.
Right, right. And then, you know, in my 30s are when things really changed for me, I guess you could say.
So what changes, and is it a event or a process after reading The Millionaire Next Door?
Yeah, well, you know, so the process began, and I started thinking, here's what I need to do. I upped up my 401k to, you know, to get the maximum matching. I started getting more serious about paying myself first, all those little things, but it was very small. It wasn't a big shift. It was very, very small. And then my husband and I got married. I was 31 years old. We got married in 2000. We immediately had kids, two kids, boom, boom. And then I did a couple things, and I was really saving for my kids, right? I did all the things that I thought I was supposed to do. And I'll talk about why those were mistakes later, but I opened up E-Trade accounts when they were infants and just invested in stocks, and they were universal gift to minor. They were, minor accounts. That's important. I opened up 529s because, of course, my kids are going to go to college. And so this is the smart thing to do, right? I opened up 529s with College Illinois, and I'll talk about why that was a mistake later as well. when my older son was two, he was diagnosed with autism. My husband was a union iron worker, so he was making pretty good money. And we decided at that time he would quit working to be the stay-at-home dad, drive my son to his therapies every day. And my younger son was 6 months old. So I had a two-year-old and a six-month-old. And so fast forward about 5 months, my husband was in a motorcycle accident, and he broke his neck. And unfortunately, he became paralyzed at that time. This is June of 2004.
Mm.
Okay. So he's 35, 36 years old. Again, we have a two-year-old and almost two-and-a-half-year-old and a one-year-old. And my husband's hospitalized for about 5 months. I have to sell my home. I have to buy a new home. I have to make the new home accessible. I have to find childcare. I have to find someone to take my son to therapy still. Oh, and I have to keep working this whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
So that sounds like your stress level was through the roof.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So you had to sell the house in a time that you weren't planning on selling it. I'm sure that that wasn't a great experience.
Well, oh yeah, I should, this is important too. So when we decided, my husband has been in the trades his whole entire life. And we sat down and we talked about how we're going to make this work and that he would quit his job as an iron worker, but he was going to do like home remodeling and things on the side. So we got a home equity line of credit and he bought a work truck and all these tools and everything to do his side business a couple months before the accident.
Oh my gosh.
I had a mortgage. I had our second mortgage or our home equity line of credit. And yes, so that.
So I mean, this is just a devastating turn of events, obviously, for a whole bunch of reasons with this. So what is, I guess, your position at the, in the month, you know, following, you know, the 5 months in the hospital with that, what is the state of affairs?
So, you know, we sold the home at a loss because of just all the investment in his remodeling business. We sold the home at a loss. And then when we moved, we bought a house near our families because I knew we'd need support. But that house, it was being built, but not completely finished, but it wasn't fully accessible. So I had to spend additional money to make the home accessible, right, for a wheelchair and all of that. And it was pretty devastating financially because, as I said, I was a spender and we didn't have reserves. And we took out the second line of credit on the home for his business. And it was a really bad situation financially. What I did at that time, over a period of time, I think some people, I don't know if they don't have the income or means, how they would have got through that without filing for bankruptcy, quite honestly. I did not. I went to a debt consolidation, and this was a couple years later. It was called Nova Debt at the time. It's now called Navicor, and consolidated all my medical bills. There were a lot, credit card, everything else. And worked out payment plans, and I paid that off. And now I have perfect credit today, but I was able to avoid any kind of a bankruptcy situation. And what I've learned is there's forgiveness everywhere. And I think people have learned that, like with COVID. COVID has really like shined a light on forgiveness and hardship. But you have to ask. You have to ask. And it's amazing how forgiving or flexible people can be if you just ask. Some people just don't know what's available and they don't ask.
So let's walk through it. I mean, where you have this 2.5 and 1 year old, you're coming out of a lot of hospital debt and that kind of stuff. How do you manage things in the interim and then afterwards? Do you have to hire someone to come in and watch the kids while you work, or, you know, how does that work?
Yes. I did hire someone to come into the house and watch the kids. We put a camera system in. I also hired a cab service, and my brother-in-law and different people took turns taking my son with autism to his therapy sessions every day. And we did have like people come into the home, like physical therapy and nursing staff and things, probably for the first year that my husband was home after his accident.
How much do you think it cost to rent the household with all these things in that period?
$30,000.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And what happens, and does that all get it formed into debt that you have to then consolidate later? Is that kind of what we're talking about with the Novacore?
Yes. Mm-hmm. 100%. All the medical, all the credit card, it was kind of all rolled in together, which was nice. It was one payment for me, which is a load off my mind. Just, you know, mentally, it made it easy to just have that one payment.
Absolutely. And what is kind of the financial position following your husband's return back to home?
Yes. Again, I had to liquidate the work truck and all of that kind of thing. Really, the focus was not on finances at all. The focus was on what is
absolutely
his capability. You know, I was worried about my son's progress with his autism and what his outcome is going to be, but also my husband. It was, you know, nobody really knows until you get home, and it was a long process. But that first year was, you know, he had a lot of occupational therapy and learning to do things again. And I will say it did take time, but now, you know, fast forward all these years, it was several years later, he got his driver's license. He drives with hand controls. He does all the cooking and cleaning. Thank God, because I hate to clean the house. And he does all that and, you know, and did the childcare. It took a while. During that time, you know, I did outsource a lot of things but the financial impact of that just accumulated over time. And I would say that, Scott, that was about 3 years, probably the first 3 years.
And that makes perfect sense. You know, I'm asking these questions because we're a finance podcast, but yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, there's like many more important things than that. And it sounds like for 3 years, you had to put them on hold to make sure that you could take care of your family and put all these pieces into place with these kinds of things. And it does sound like, though, that things began to gradually improve for your family members during that period of time, and that it was a process, but there was some light at the end of the tunnel, and folks got into much better, things got much better over that period. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, things are, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want him to be paralyzed, but I think he's fully independent, and we, you know, are functioning, and yes, everything is good. And like I said, I put the E-Trade accounts and the 529s in place for the kids when they were babies. So that I didn't think about for a while. And we did get insurance, life insurance and disability insurance right when we were first had kids too. That was important because I'm probably overinsured, but insurance is never cheaper than when you're younger. And my husband now is not insurable. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that I guess was one lesson learned. You know, I can always get more insurance on myself, but he is not insurable.
Did you have insurance on him?
We did. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did that pay for...
It was small. No. But the plan, I mean, so fast forward, you know, we got through, you know, kind of all the hard stuff. He relearned, you know, how to do the day-to-day things. He got his driver's license. And then we, you know, realized, okay, now we need to get our house in order again. We've neglected this. And I turned to Novadebt, which I said is now Navacore. Did the debt consolidation. I paid that off early. Again, I've been very blessed to have a career in tech that, you know, it's just been, I'm just so grateful. We had good medical insurance as well, which I don't know what we would have done without it.
That's really important. You had a great paying job. You had great health insurance. I remember the 90s and the 2000s. I don't remember when HMOs fell out of favor because there's not a ton of those now anymore, but getting anything paid was a nightmare. So having good health insurance is really, really important for situations such as this. There's a lot of kind of skeezy outfits out there that call themselves debt consolidation, but this one is a reputable company. How did you find them?
Mindy, and that's why I wanted to mention it. Again, this was pre-COVID, if you remember. So I think since COVID, a lot of kind of shady organizations have popped up. Novadebt was around back then, and they have changed their name to Navicore. That's why I wanted to mention it, because they've been around forever and they are truly legit. You have to be careful, because people are going to take advantage, and there are a lot of scams out there, particularly since COVID, unfortunately.
Yeah. So Navicore, we will include a link to that in our show notes, which can be found at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow233. And yeah, I definitely want to make sure that if you are listening and you need to do some debt consolidation, make sure you're going with a reputable company. Scott, we should really look into how to vet that. Because there are some really shady operations out there.
Yeah, like I have no opinion of Navicore coming into this show or any of these consolidators with that. So I'm just learning here, and that would be a good thing to study. And if anybody knows an expert, let's get them on the show, and we can talk about that as an option for folks.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, and I'm going to post this question in the Facebook group when this show comes out, and just ask, you know, how do you vet a debt consolidation company? Because it's... Boy, there seems to be a lot of need for oversight in that field, and it seems like there just isn't.
For sure.
Karen, you obviously can't plan for what happened to you and your family in this period of time. But if you could go back and give advice to yourself in that period, maybe when you're 30, 31, getting married and thinking about starting the family, what would you say? Are there some things that you know, knowing what you know now, you might have been able to do, or
absolutely,
that could protect other folks' families, and if in the event that the unfortunate happens and they have to go through something similar?
Absolutely. And I'll say, you know, I just want to say 26% of adults in the U.S. are disabled or have some kind of a disability. So, and accidents happen all the time. So at some point in your life as an adult, you probably are going to become disabled, or somebody in your family will, at least like short-term disability. I would say flexibility is key. So if I think back to what I did for my kids, and this is, you know, I opened up the E-Trade accounts and I opened them up as minor accounts. I would have changed them to trust. Now, my older son does have a special needs trust. My younger son does not. My stepson did not. What happened, 90% of the portfolio is Apple. Purchased at a price of $4 in the year 2002. So I looked it up. So the gain on that is about, it's over 33,000%.
Yeah.
So they're doing okay. My younger son knows the time value of money, and he knows that he doesn't have to, like, I don't want to work for the man, Mom. I'm going to do my YouTube. And I'm just like, you are, But my stepson, he knew, like, when he turned 21, he cashed that out. It's gone. Had I have this in a trust, we could have set that age at 25, 30, something else. You know, my younger son is a lot more mature. But so that was a mistake to put it in as a minor account. The other mistake I made was a 529.
Hold on. Before we jump into the 529, let's clarify again. The mistake that you made was not putting it into a trust. You just put it into a minor account, which is in their name. So when they turn
21,
they can just take all of it. Okay. So how old is your oldest son?
So my older son is he's 19. My younger son is 18.
Okay, so 19 and 18, and they have Apple from 2002.
Yes. From 2002 and 2003, a lot.
And sorry, did you say one of them is already cashed out, or you think that they're going to cash it out?
So my stepson, when I got married, my stepson was 10. We did the same thing for him. He cashed out. He turned 21. I think like that day, that money was gone. I bought a car and just, I don't know, it's gone. My younger son, he does a lot of individual stocks. He picks his own stocks. He has from a very young age. He's really smart about it, and he's not a spender at all. He has a lot of good habits. My older son is 19. Like I said, he has autism. He, on the spectrum, he's lower functioning. So just became potty trained at 18. He doesn't communicate well. He's verbal, but doesn't communicate well. And he probably will never be independent. So the 529s, again, when my son was a baby, you have no way of knowing what their outcomes are going to be, that he was going to have autism or whatever. So I bought the 529s and I went with College of Illinois. We live in Illinois, but I did look at all the state plans. And College of Illinois is a prepaid plan, meaning you pay for so many semesters, and you can pay for a semester at a state school, or you can pay for a semester at a private college, and you pay the price at that time. So in 2003, you're locked into that price. And then when your child graduates, you've paid for X semesters. Now, my older son is not going to go to college ever. That money can only be used for tuition, right? Or education expenses. And now my younger son sees his E-Trade account and doesn't want to work for the man. I mean, he's going to junior college now just because he wants to run cross country, but he's not, I don't know. I mean, I've encouraged him to go to, you know, we can use it for a coding boot camp. I am locked in. Now, can I get that money out? They have 10 years to use it. So if he changes his mind in 10 years and wants to go to a university, that money's there. I can transfer my older sons to my younger. I can do those things. I can take it out. Only I can take out what I invested in it in 2003, which sucks. You know what I mean? Not that gain the whole time. See what I mean? So, you know, hindsight, I mean, of course I thought my kids were going to go to college and this was a great idea, but I could have invested that on my own, Mindy and Scott, and been so much further ahead, and my kids could have, you know, my son could buy a house with it, or he could go to college, or he could do, like, there's just so much more flexibility. I think, you know, in hindsight, the 529s are too
bad. So what I'm hearing you say is what you would have done is either put the money into a trust that you could have a lot more control over and invest the money on your children's behalf, or invest it yourself in some other type of plan or some other type of investment that then you could have used the equity or cash flow from that to then fund the educations or give to your children those types of things. Is that kind of?
Yes, absolutely.
No, that's really interesting in saying, hey, there's one outcome that I can do with this account can really pigeonhole a lot of things. I think it sparks the thought about like HSAs, for example. Do they have a similar type of thing with that, even though they're, you know, we've talked about them as such a powerful account. Is there a similar type of risk that you're running by having too much of your wealth in an HSA with that?
That's a good question, Scott, because I know that it's only for medical expenses, but the definition of medical expenses is really broad. Like Band-Aids are a medical expense and contact solution is a medical expense. So you can buy a lot of things with your HSA money. It also grows tax-free. You can pull it out tax-free. And as you get older, you can still use it. I think when you get to 59 and a half, you could just pull it out for anything, right?
Yeah. That's true.
So it's a lot less restrictive than the 529 plan, but I also had no idea that the 529 plan was so restrictive. On the surface, it makes sense because you see college prices going up and up and up, and you buy them, you know, like you said, when he's a baby and you don't know.
Yeah, it does depend on your plan. So College of Illinois, like I said, was prepaid. So you pay the price for a semester, either a private school or public school at that time. And that's what I did. So yes, they're transferable. I know this. Yes, I have 10 years. And yes, I know I can take it out and just recoup the original investment from 20 years ago. I do know this, but
better than nothing. But yeah, we're here to prevent people from making these same.
And I mean, regardless if my son wasn't disabled, I mean, there's nothing to say that he would have wanted to go to college either. You know?
Yeah. Right now, my older daughter wants to, and my younger daughter's like, nope, I'm not even going to work. And I'm like, that's not how financial.
I thought she's going to retire from school.
Yeah. Well, she wants to. I'm financially independent, sweetheart. You're not. That's my money. Listen up, business owners. Here's some quick math. Fewer costs equals more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Don't let rising costs sink your business's growth. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/bpmoney. That's netsuite.com/bpmoney. netsuite.com/bpmoney. Pretty good episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with Rent App. Landlords love Rent App because it makes rent collection a breeze. Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters. Landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with a digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? Rent App, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let me ask you this, backing up as well. Is there anything, you know, would you have any advice around insurance or anything like that as well on those fronts going, you know, as you got married and had your kids?
Absolutely. We did get insurance early, and I would say there, it's always going to be cheaper when you're younger. The longer you wait, the more expensive insurance is going to be. And I'm thankful we had the insurance that we had. I wish we had more. But yes, and I've used Policy Genius. They're fantastic. Quote Wizard is good too. Quote Wizard, I think, is LendingTree, but I've used Policy Genius and they do all the work for you, and it's super, super easy to get additional policies for myself.
Since you have your older son has autism with that, how do you handle insurance today with his situation?
I'm not sure I understand the question, how I handle it. We have guardianship of him, and he's covered through my employer benefits through the age of 26.
And then what happens after 26?
That's a very good question.
Because if you have guardianship, I thought legal guardianship meant something different with regards to insurance, although I only know enough to be dangerous. I don't know.
It does. And I should know this, but I'm not exactly sure. I'm not sure how much longer he can be covered, given that we do have legal guardianship of him. I haven't looked into that yet, unfortunately.
Okay.
He'll get he'll get Social Security and Medicare as well at some point.
Well, let's go back to I think we pick up the story around 3 to 5 years following your husband's accident, and you're beginning to consolidate your debt, and you know things are improving in the in your household and all that kind of stuff. How does the story progress from there, the financial journey?
Yeah, so that's when I really started doing all the things. The Nova debt situation was humiliating, I guess you could say. I'm a really private person and a lot of anxiety about coming on the podcast, but I think it's an opportunity to help people.
Thank you. This has already, I think, been so helpful to a lot of people. I bet you a lot of people haven't thought about the possibility that something like what's happened to you guys could happen to them. There may be other folks that are experiencing parts of that, and I think this is going to be really valuable. So thank you so much. And for coming on.
That's when behaviors really changed. Things really clicked. That's when I started maxing out the 401k, not just to the match, but just maxing out everything. That's when I really clamped down on the spending and took a look at, I started tracking, just tracking. It's like when you track your calories and you're like, holy crap, look at all of what I'm eating. How can I do that? Same thing with the spending. You know, you're tracking it and not really doing anything with it, just like tracking it. Oh, it's quite an eye opener. And that's when I, you know, things really changed around here in our household, I would say. And again, super fortunate to work for great companies that I have, like Cisco and Box and Microsoft. And I know I'm very fortunate. And so it was easier to dig out of that hole and kind of, you know, turn things around.
So same question I asked earlier, was this a process or an event that kind of changed things for your household? Was there an event that triggered it? How did that work, or what was the change?
Yeah, I think the event was, I think a low was the Nova debt, and just conceding that I need help. I just need help getting out of this situation. I'm not going to be able to do it by myself. And it was a process. After that, it was a process. And I think just seeing that, you know, it wasn't even like day over day or month over month, but year over year, getting out of that hole and making progress, it just kind of incented you to do more, you know, and start listening to podcasts, reading more books, doing all the things, leveraging the vehicles like the HSA. That all came over time. It wasn't a single event. It was a learning process for me.
And what did that look like for you? First of all, what year did you consolidate the debt?
2007. 2007, okay, 2008.
How would you kind of peg your net worth around that time?
Probably negative $150K.
Negative $150. And that's when you consolidate. And that's and from there, how do things kind of proceed over the next couple of years until, you know, or what's kind of another milestone that you...
Sure. You know, while we're paying off the Nova debt, and I say me because my husband, if I pull out a spreadsheet or talk about finances, he's just glazes over. As I'm like paying off the debt consolidation, my husband's getting his driver's license. Now we need a vehicle that's accessible with hand controls, which are like insanely expensive, and he needs a power wheelchair, which is insanely expensive. So we still have to buy the things, right, that we need. So it was very, very slow progress. And then once the Nova debt was paid off, and that took maybe 2.5-3 years, then that's when things kind of really, really kicked in. So the spending, as far as the fun spending, right, the shopping and the trips, that stopped. But that was replaced with improvements to the home, accessible vehicles, power wheelchair, medical bills, right? So it took probably a good 10 years to really feel like now we're able to save. We're realizing we don't have any credit card debt. We don't have any car payments.
So that's around 2015, 16, 17?
Yes. I would say 20s. probably 2017.
How are things at 20 in 20? I mean, now we're skipping over large swaths of time, so we'll come back and go over any of that. But how do things look at that point? Is, you know, what is the financial position around that milestone?
Right. So debt consolidation is gone. We have the mortgage on the, you know, our primary mortgage. We have 3 car payments, and small credit card debt that's usually paid off every month.
And what was kind of the goal at that point? Did your financial goals or thought processes change at that point?
Yes. They became like the goals then became, I guess, more motivating because it wasn't just get out of this big debt hole, but it's pay off my car, pay off Ray's car. So something more, I guess, tangible, that something you felt better about, that then we could move into our asset column, if you will. So that was the plan. And we did that probably once a year. We paid off each of the 3 cars. That takes us to 2020. I think we paid off my car and maybe in 2019. So all the cars are paid off. No credit card debt, or very low credit card debt. It's monthly. Savings, you know, we have a nice solid savings. And again, I'm maxing out 401k. I'm over 50, so I get the extra for the late bloomers that need to catch up. I'm doing that. And so here's the goal for me. The goal, and I'm a little obsessed about this now. It's, you know, I have peers and I love them, and we're so fortunate, and they're buying vacation homes and they're, you know, doing all this. I'm working for my son because he's never going to be independent, and I want him to have a good quality of life. And unfortunately, in this country, good care costs a lot of money. And so that's what I'm working for. I'm not working for my retirement. I could retire today. I'm working so he has a good quality of life and he's well taken care of. And I don't know how much money that's going to take. So I'm a little obsessed about that.
Well, look, I think that is an awesome goal. And I think that it is tough that's the reality of that. But I think we can help a lot of people, I think, by going into that and saying, like, what are the uncertainties around that? What are some of the basic things that you've kind of discovered so far? You know, more is always better, but like, how do you begin to approach that problem of setting up finances for a dependent, like in your situation? I think that's a great topic if we can go into that and learn from you about what you're doing there.
Yeah. So we set up the special needs trust. And now any gifting that our families do, they should write, you know, instead of writing a check to my son, they write it to the trust. He'll have an able account. Yeah.
And how does that work? Like, look, can we just go to very, very basics of that? Why that particular instrument? How does that work? Why, what are the advantages there? And what comes with that?
Yeah. I'm not an expert, but there are tax benefits to having it in trust. There's also, you know, how it's dispersed. And the big one is the taxes, right? And then it won't factor into his government benefits. So he still will be able to get full government benefits and Social Security and all that. And they won't look at that as an asset that he has, like his asset. It's a trust.
So it's essentially a way to, it's similar to, you can defer it or not pay taxes on it, like a 401k. And then the disbursements, will those be income to your son in the future?
I believe so. Yes. And they can only they're used for certain things. So I have an ABLE account for his, like housing in that. And then this is used anything toward his care. So whether it be medical or clothing or anything that he needs for his care, will all come out of the trust.
And is his trust comprised of the same Apple stock from 2002, or is that a separate E-Trade account for him?
No, it's all the same. It's all together now. And yes, and then there's also, we have a Discover. If our family like gifts him anything, there's I have a high yield savings account that's a trust account. And his special needs trust name, that's where that goes. So I haven't, I'm not touching. And to be clear, none of this will, I guess, go into effect until my husband and I pass away. So we're we're caring, we're, you know, paying all of his financial care now, of course, but this is like a legacy.
Oh, okay. And do you manage the investments in this?
I do. Again, I don't touch them, but I made the investments, 20 years ago. And like you said, I love tech. It's what I know. And so, you know, it's Apple, it's Amazon, it's Microsoft, and they did really well. And I didn't buy any for me, but I did for my kids, you know, for my boys. But yeah, it's just done extremely, extremely well.
That's great.
Did you buy Amazon way back then too?
Yes, not as much. It was like, it was heavy Apple, PayPal, eBay. Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
But no, my son, starting when he was about 8 or 9, he started making his own investments. And he was super smart. So he has the EpiPen. He's like, Mom, who makes the EpiPens? Is that Merck or Pfizer? I think we need to invest in Merck or Pfizer. And, you know, as a 9-year-old. And so he's picked some pretty good stocks too. You know, and like Roblox, you know, what the kids like. But I let him pick his own stocks. So
that's brilliant on his part.
What are some of the expenses that go along with that, what does good quality of life and care look like, for someone like your son? How do you go about thinking through that and the cost of that?
Of course. Right now our school district pays for, his education and his therapists and his one-on-one aides and everything. So we won't have to worry about that till he turns 22. He will need 24/7 care. He will need like supervision, and that's going to be probably the largest expense, that and his housing. He just needs a lot of therapy. So just that, the day to day reinforcement of regular hygiene and how you clean up after yourself, and you know, we cook with him a little bit, but it's not safe. He'll never be able to be independent and be safe, I guess you could say.
And how does one think through how much that might cost on an annual basis or something like that?
Yeah, there's
I know I'm asking tough questions. I've just wondered if these are, you know.
Yes. So the short answer is, and for the, you know, if you don't have means, I think there's always, you know, government programs. The problem with those are I think they're overcrowded. I think they're not realistic as far as how many people in the future are going to need that kind of support. And again, unfortunately, in this country, it's, you know, the level of care really equates to dollars. So I think, we're looking into different states, you know, where we could live and where the best quality of services are. It might not be in Illinois, probably not in Illinois. but yeah, It depends, and it varies greatly. And so that's why I'm overinsured. And I don't think you can estimate it, Scott. That's a tough one.
No, absolutely.
For someone,
thank you.
For someone who's listening to this, where, you know, they might just be starting this journey, where can they start looking? Where did you start looking?
For what specifically, Mindy?
For legacy care and, you know, because not everybody's going to be able to go back to 2002 and invest in Apple.
This is very, very important. I would say anybody who's going through any kind of a crossroads, please get professional advice and surround yourself with professional help. So never, never, never make a decision under stress or duress. Never, never. And my go-to people, my family, great advice, you know, but they completely out of their element to help me. It's not a good outcome. Also, for a trust situation, make sure you get someone who specializes specifically in trust. If it's special needs trust, specifically special needs trust. Do not go to your family attorney, because they're not, you could get well-intended, but misinformation, and it could really be harmful in the long run. You might not get the asset protection that you think you're getting if it's not set up properly.
So who, besides a family, it sounds like a family attorney who specializes in special needs. Is that how I would describe this person, or how would you articulate this, the professional you need?
Right. Someone who is expert in setting up special needs trust.
And would that be a lawyer or would be an attorney? CPA?
No, it would be an attorney. Okay. For sure. It would be an attorney. You might also have a financial advisor that also focuses on legacy gifting and special needs or estate planning, and that could partner with. But I would say beyond just a typical estate planning attorney, a special needs trust attorney is best. If you don't know where to turn for that, you can, if you have a local chapter of the Autism Society of America, every state has a chapter. You can contact them for resources, or Easter Seals, and they have resources and references they can pass on to you.
This is phenomenal advice. Thank you. I think a lot of people are like going to be overwhelmed about even where to begin looking for those recommendations with that. But that's a really good place, I think, to start that search there. And I think it's great advice. Like, these are all huge, high stakes decisions, and you've got to be able to know, not only do I want access here, here, or here, but also which type of trust and how to set that up for my dependent on that.
Yeah, I did a quick Google search and just special needs trust, and a bunch of things came up. So it looks like there is a lot of information online. If you find yourself in this position, you know, I think that's great advice. Never make a decision under stress or duress, and talk to people who can help you make a smart decision, you know, and talk to, I will say that, you know, there's attorneys vary in level of competency and level of communication skills. So talk to a couple. If you talk to someone and they make you feel bad, or you don't like the way they communicate, find somebody else. Get somebody that you think is going to represent your interests well.
How about this for another, I know we're throwing a lot of tough questions your way, so thank you for all this. But how do you make the balance, the decision between like where and when, and the art of how much to contribute for personal retirement versus into your son's trust with these things? Like, how did you handle that, and how do you think a framework for other people thinking about that might be?
Yeah. So my son's trust currently, what is funded there right now, and normally a trust isn't funded until after death. This is important. Ours is, just because he had the C-Trade account. And so we converted it from a minor account to a trust account. That's the only reason there's assets in it. But typically you wouldn't have assets in a trust account until after death, my understanding. So I invested that 20 years ago, Scott, and let it ride. I never touched it. Never. And then I just max out my 401k for my retirement. But again, I'm just going to keep working as long as I can, and I'm letting that ride too. And I think that eventually I will use that, but I just max it out. I'll use that for retirement whenever I get around to retiring. And then my life insurance will further fund my son's trust.
I see. So you're not even, you're really thinking about it differently. You're just saying, I'm going to maximize my personal net worth as much as I can. And that will go into the trust, and that's really the essence of the strategy. So that actually makes it very simple in some ways around the approach there.
Yeah.
Okay. So that wasn't a tough question. But thank you. I wasn't aware of that, that context.
No worries.
Awesome. What else do you think we should be asking you about, or that might be some important topics to touch on?
Let's see. I think for somebody just starting, you know, I took a while to get started with investing. I did pick single stocks myself, and I got pretty lucky. But, you know, I know we talk about, you know, when you invest and the fee for fee advisors and things like that. I would say, you know, start out, like, you know, take baby steps and incrementally get better. So I go with an Edward Jones or somebody that's going to have for fee, and let them put everything in place. Then you can transition everything away and manage things yourself. It's okay to get started, but just get started. I would say it took me a while, and was later in life. And again, I'm fortunate that I was able to turn things around, but I wish I had started things sooner, I guess. I know you hear that all the time. I wish I invested sooner. I wish I maxed out my 401k sooner. That time, you can't get it back.
That's so powerful. You can't get that time back. I'm gonna quote that.
I think that's the deal, is time and compounding and rate of return and how much you put in, how early you do it.
And then just the flexibility, just having the control and flexibility. Not, you know, most people aren't going to find themselves in a situation where they have, you know, in my situation, it's quite rare, but everybody's going to face sooner or later some kind of a hurdle, an obstacle. And I just think that flexibility is key.
Hey, Karen, what is your job right now?
Yeah, I am a technical director at Microsoft. I have a team of technical specialists report to me in state and local government, and they focus on teams and intelligence. So that's where I'm at now.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it sounds like an awesome career, and it sounds like you're doing very well on the career front with all that kind of stuff, and obviously been very successful there. Well, let's move on to the famous four if we're feeling good about a lot of these things. We ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay, Karen, what is your favorite finance book?
Okay, so my favorite, I don't know if it's my favorite. The first one I started with, I think I mentioned Millionaire Next Door. That's kind of when things started clicking, and that was maybe in the year 2000. But one I love that's recent is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. I love that book, and I call it a finance book because really it's like the art of negotiation. It's negotiating so your life depends on it, and how to negotiate like the price of buying a car. And I think it's just fantastic. So that's my new favorite, I guess.
Yeah, we actually had Chris Voss on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Show back in the day. I know this because I was the guest interviewee on that one. So I'll find the episode number here in a second here. But what was your biggest money mistake?
Overspending and not maxing out my 401ks earlier. That's boring, but that's the answer.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. Scott, that was episode 260 of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast.
Oh, thank you.
The Chris Voss episode. Karen, what is your best piece of advice for people who are just starting out?
Yeah. Think about the flexibility. Like I said, don't get locked into something that is too restrictive, like a 529 or like a minor account where you it's too constraining. Think about that flexibility and how you can control your money.
Love it. Yeah, you're making a lifetime decision that is impacting your life and somebody else's with those types of things. You got to have control
and don't make it under severe stress or duress. Get advisors. Mm-hmm. To help you with those big decisions, that sometimes can be overwhelming.
What is your favorite joke to tell at parties?
Okay. All right. This one might be a little dated. And it's like, why didn't the Terminator upgrade to Windows 10? Well, I asked him, he said, I still love Vista, baby.
That's awesome. That was fantastic.
My husband was Microsoft certified for something for a long time, so I know all those jokes.
Oh, that's an awesome joke.
I haven't heard that one though. That's awesome. Okay, Karen, do you have anything that you want to promote? Where can people find out more about you?
Okay, my website, KarenFerrero.com. I'm at Twitter at Karen Ferrero and LinkedIn at Karen Ferrero. And anybody who is going through a tough situation or wants some advice, either, you know, career advice getting into tech or going through some kind of a hard time, I am completely open and you can contact me directly.
Awesome. We'll link to those in the show notes here.
Yeah, that's
at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow233.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a very generous offer. Thank you, Karen. This was really, really good. This was so helpful. I know there are people listening who are contemplating balancing out financial independence with known medical expenses or known expenses outside of the little FI bubble. And I think you've given people a lot of things to think about. I certainly learned a lot. And I'm sure you will hear me referring to this episode in future episodes. Oh, you should listen to Karen Ferrero episode 233 because she talks about special needs trusts. And that's, I didn't even know that was something that existed. So thank you so much for sharing with us today. This was really, really great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And we will talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, that was Karen Ferrero, and holy cow, does she have an awesome story. I want to highlight the one thing she said. She said, if we didn't have the means to do this, I would have had to declare bankruptcy. And unfortunately, in America, where our in health insurance is tied to our job, if you don't have really great health insurance and you have this big old curveball coming at you, you could be medically bankrupt, medical bill bankrupt. And I mean, her husband's medical bills easily in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Her son's medical bills also easily in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And to be able to weather this storm, this is why you strive to be financially independent. So things like this, curveballs like this, don't just completely derail your entire life forever.
Yeah. No, I think financial independence, even if the worst happens and you're not, you know, you have life throws you a couple of curveballs that are going to set you back significantly, it's better to have that, to have the assets and the income from what would have been financial independence to help weather those storms than to not have them. So financial independence, in addition to being a great end goal that can make your life really, really wonderful in a lot of ways, it also is in itself a big insurance, a big insurance fund. So it's worth pursuing for a number of reasons.
Exactly. You know what? I'm going to highlight that, Scott. It's worth pursuing for a number of reasons. It isn't just so you can quit your job. It's so that you don't have to always be focused on money. You can open up your mind and think about other things.
Absolutely.
Okay. Scott, we ran a little bit long today, so should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
From episode 233 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench, and I am Indy Jensen, saying, put on your cape and escape, ape! The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom, and the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.